Hey, welcome back to the Funding the Dream on Kickstarter podcast. My name is Salvador Brigman. On this show, we focus on board games, tabletops, video games, all those kinds of ways in which you can create your very first game, or if this is your second, your third, some of the tips that you might be missing out on in order to build a business around your craft. Today's podcast episode, I brought on a creator who has had more than 400 backers for his Kickstarter campaign for This Game Is a Disaster, which is a quick and easy to learn 2-6 player game celebrating disaster movies and good old-fashioned destruction. Now, this episode is really aimed at those people that are just making their game for the very first time, right? And they're trying to figure out, like, how do I even do logistics? What do I do for gameplay, artwork? Like, how do I raise money on Kickstarter? When should I launch the campaign? All that kind of stuff we focus on in today's podcast episode. I think it's very intimidating, very difficult to launch your new game because, number one, you got to put yourself out there. Like, no one likes to put themselves out there unless you're an extrovert. I'm definitely much more of an introvert. I'm a writer. I love, you know, writing books and that kind of stuff. I do my other podcast, which, you know, I've been doing since 2015. I've been in the industry since 2012. I'm much more of an introvert, even though I do like stuff like YouTube. It's more of because I feel like I have to, like, I want to get out good education. However, in my off moments, I'm definitely more reading a book and, like, doing more introverted things. So it's always hard to put yourself out there as an individual. Now, on this episode, not only are you going to learn why it's so important to put yourself out there, but also a really unique hack, a trick, if you will, to develop instant rapport with potential backers on Kickstarter. Now, this is something that I see being used all the time when it comes to launching gadgets and gizmos and stuff on Kickstarter. But as it relates now with board games, it still isn't being used very much. So this is kind of like a hidden trick, I think, that you can use on social media in order to get instant rapport. And you'll learn about that today on the show. In addition, you will learn a hack in order to get traffic and funding within the first couple of days of launching a new campaign on Kickstarter. This hack, again, is used a lot when it comes to my work and projects I've worked on, in the gadget, gizmo, design products, fashion items, those kind of stuff. But still, it is not being used with board games. So you're missing out on a proven way to get traffic, funding, and backers within the first couple of days of your Kickstarter campaign. Finally, we're going to get a little bit more nitty-gritty into pricing. Like, how do you price your game? How should you even approach launching a game when it is your first game that you're launching on Kickstarter, etc.? And this is, again, I think taking a lot of the mindsets that entrepreneurs will use to launch products and just putting on that hat for a second. I know that, like, talking about entrepreneurship and business is not always, like, the funnest thing if you're a creative type. However, you do have to wear that hat, and you don't have to wear it for a little bit, but you do have to wear that hat if you want to have a successful crowdfunding campaign. And in addition, if you want to, more importantly, build a business off of this game launch. And by that, I mean, you know, having people that are working for you, having a robust foundation for the business, so you can afford to do things like marketing and PR and advertising. The people that stick around, think about, like, Magic the Gathering or Dungeons and Dragons, those games are long lasting. The only way you can have a long lasting game is if you have a solid business strategy behind this project. And business does not always go hand in hand with creativity, right? It's really sometimes polar opposites, I would say. But it's something you gotta master, the business of board games, if you want to be successful in the long run. And that's what I'm trying to help you do here, is to approach it in a much more friendly way. And to by hearing from other people who are out there just like you on this podcast, who are creative, who are making games, but also can master the business side, I think it just also shows you it's not brain science. You know, it's not rocket science. It's really easy. You have lots of people who are not very intelligent that can do very well in business. And it's really something where, as long as you take the time to learn it, then you can incorporate this into your launch. I hope that you get that out of today's podcast episode. In addition, at the end of this show, I will mention a few different things in terms of, if you want to be on this podcast, how you can do that. I'll share some other stuff at the end of this podcast episode, but I hope you get a lot of value out of it. I also run a YouTube channel. Just search my name, Salvador Brigman, B-R-I-G-G-M-A-N, and you will come across my YouTube channel where I share a lot of great stuff there also. But without further ado, let's get into today's podcast episode. Bobby, welcome to the show.
It's great to be on, Sal. I'm so excited that the podcast is back.
I know, right? It's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like a pillar in the community. Honestly, I feel you know?
Yeah, I was really excited the first time I was on with Richard, and I was so surprised that he actually took me on, but he liked the story. And, you know, I was pretty bummed when it sort of went away, but, you know, life happens. I understand these things. But when I saw it pop back on my feed, I was like, yes, it's back.
Richard is a legend, definitely. His ghost walks these halls.
Yeah, it's such a great guy.
So I kind of want to get started here. Maybe you could tell us just a bit about like your story when it comes to Kickstarter. Have you created board games or card games before? Was this your first one? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So growing up, I was, I always kind of created games, but nothing formal. And I played Dungeons and Dragons, and I noticed that a lot of people who make board games do have a background in some sort of role-playing game, particularly people that tended to Dungeon Master, because they kind of set the scene and, you know, were a little more organized than the other players that would just show up. And so, you know, that was kind of my nerdy childhood, high school, that sort of thing. And, you know, it took a little hiatus around college as, you know, learning and trying to meet girls and that sort of thing happened. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, once I started playing the new wave of games, the Settlers of Catan, Carcassonne, those sort of gateway games from that came out in the 90s and early 2000s, that's when I was hooked and I was back in. And I think for me, when I started working at a tech company and there were other people that had these sort of geeky interests and it became sort of cool again, that's when I like really dove deep, because I don't know if you noticed, but fantasy, science fiction, geekiness, that like that all of a sudden became cool like a few years ago, where it was not cool when I was growing up. And so, you know, it was kind of cool to just be able to, you know, be yourself and not pretend to be interested in things that are less interesting, like sports or something for someone.
Yeah,
like me.
Yeah. Finally, it becomes a good chat up line for a girl. I play D&D.
Yeah, there you go.
When it comes to that, you know, I think that there's a very different kind of perspective when you're doing something as a hobby, right? And you're enjoying it and you're having fun with your friends versus then you decide to like create the actual game or you decide to get into gameplay and like how things work. When did that transition happen?
Well, the tricky thing there is, and a lot of people probably notice this, is trying to make sure that when you start getting a little more technical and analytical, that it doesn't become like a job. Like, you still got to enjoy the games and have fun playing. But for me, I didn't really have aspirations to make my own game because it just seemed like such a difficult thing. You know, you see Kickstarter and you see these big successes and you're like, wow, like they must have a huge company behind them. And it wasn't until I created my own community on Facebook and I started finding out that almost half the people wanted to make their own game or had some level of interest. And I thought that was really interesting. And so I kind of took it as a challenge to do it, to see like what lessons I could learn and, you know, kind of try to piece together cliff notes on how to do it and help other people in my community. And it's worked out pretty well so far.
And this is Board Game Club? Is that the community name?
Yeah. Yeah. The Board Game Club on Facebook. We have like a little over 5,000 members now. And if you notice, when you join a group on Facebook, you could ask questions. And so one thing I just decided to ask on there was like, hey, have you ever thought about making your own board game? And I was really surprised. I thought that, you know, maybe like 1 out of 10 would say yes, but it really is like a half or so. I mean, people love playing games and they, I guess a lot of people want to make their own games, but like we were talking about before we started, it's just such a broad like knowledge base to know. There's so many things you got to do. You get gameplay, playtesting, marketing. And so it's a little intimidating. So when I set out making this game as a disaster, I wanted to see like, what are like the main elements that you need to be able to make a game. And my thought was, if someone can get their first game out, then everything after that's like all downhill, because you've been through it, you know, trial by fire kind of thing.
In your mind, what was like going to be the most challenging, like the biggest question mark that you had before you embarked on that path of like trying to make your own game?
I think when I started out, I thought that just the actual putting together the mechanics would be the trickiest part. But what I started finding out was that part was actually pretty fun, and you know, you could work through it and play test it and you can get through almost anything. But the hardest part for me was staying motivated And actually, it's sort of like the boring kind of like day-to-day tasks, you know, the organization of how do I do everything that I need to do. And
Logistics, yeah.
then, yeah, the logistics. That's, you know, because you play games, they're fun, you do them, but not everybody is a business creator. And so I think that's the part that ends up being the most difficult. How to run a business, how to market. Those are the probably the most important parts after you have a game that you've proven is fun. And that's something that not everybody, especially creative types, not everybody's good at it. And so I think that trips people up a lot, especially the marketing.
So I want to talk about that definitely in just a second, but while we're on the subject of gameplay, do you have any tips on designing a good quality game? How many iterations should it go through? How long should you spend designing it?
I would say my main focus is on people making their first game because, like I said, once you do that, I feel like you've made connections in the community, you've proven yourself, you've gotten a knowledge base that you could work through those other issues. So, for the first game, my main advice is to not do a ton of iterations, not do a ton of artwork, and really have a low funding goal and work on building up a community of people that are watching your process and get excited for you and feel invested. And then that momentum will bring you forward, and you'll get your play testers. You'll get everything else. If I were to say a hard number, I think for this game, it's a disaster. We probably went through, I would say, maybe 15 different versions, but they weren't hugely different versions because it's a card game, right? And there's something like 22 different cards and different amounts of each cards. So there was a little tweaking here and there. We found things that would either unbalance the game or make it less fun or make it drag or even worse, make it an endless loop where nobody could win. So once we like ironed all those out, then we were pretty good to go.
So there basically has to be a winner, obviously. And those
Right.
moments you talked about where it's kind of dragging on, is that something where like you're basically you almost have like a checklist where you're like, okay, this is dragging on here. We need to think of a solution here, like that kind of stuff. And you're just noticing that as you go through these iterations.
Yeah, we mostly noticed it from play testers. And again, this is where it helps having a community. And I would just blast out print and plays to my community. And then people would just play it. And then they'd get back to me and they'd say, hey, if I end up with a tornado and he's got an earthquake, then, you know, then we're constantly reshuffling and the game never ends. And I'm like, oh, I did not see that coming. Yeah, I mean, like, you try to iron these out as best you can. And the community will tell you what you're missing, because it's so when you're so close to it and you know the rules and you know everything, like you don't even realize when people are playing it wrong until they tell you, because you know you're so you know the rules so intimately, and it's hard to see it from like an outsider perspective.
Totally. Do you have any advice on assembling that community? Like, did you just start with your friends, kind of, or were you building a Facebook group from day one? Like, how were you assembling that community?
So it started out where I was playing a lot at work. Like I said, I worked at a tech company, and we, you know, there's all these other people who love board games, and we sort of like fed off each other, and it was awesome. We like sort of commandeered a conference room and just like put up pictures of board games around it, and put a piece of paper that said board game room, and like nobody questioned it, so it just became the board game room in the company, and like
That's
there's no
awesome.
authorization. We knew that we made it when we looked on the phone in the room, and it actually said board game club. Like that was the title of the room. It's like someone just thought it was really a board game room, and so it just on the sneak we just turned it into our own little thing. But unfortunately, just you know, things happen, and people either got laid off, or people had babies, or moved, or whatever, or got more busy. And so, you know, that sort of disintegrated. And what I was trying to do is I was trying to find another community of people to just like chat. And so I just made my own, and it started growing. And it started with friends, and then it just built it from there. And that, I think that's an important part. And what I'm trying to do with my page, which right now it's on Facebook, it's different from the Board Game Club. It's right now it's Bobby Board Games, which I'm not crazy about. I'm probably going to change that. But on there, I'm trying to give little tips on how to build an email list, how to build your community, that sort of thing. But the biggest thing, I think, like the best tip I have for that is to just make yourself out there every day. What I did when I started my community was I would live stream every single day about something board game related, and until it started picking up momentum and taking a life of its own. And so now I don't have to do it quite as much. I don't have to live stream. I don't have to post as much because there's enough people that they make the content. And that's the great thing about building the community is it's an asset that sort of like waters itself.
I think one of the difficulties of creating your own game or creating a community, we'll start there, is it's hard to put yourself out there, right? Like doing a live stream is just so, it feels so unnatural the first few times you do it, or you don't want to like spam people. You don't want to invite people into the group. Like you don't know if they're interested or not. What was your approach to kind of get over some of those emotional hurdles?
Well, I had a little advantage because back in the day I used to have a YouTube channel and I would do comedy sketches. So I kind of had like, and there was also live streaming there just, you know, with people that, people, the fans. So I've always been like a video creator. I've always made like dumb little videos with my friends. But if I totally get how someone could be like, I don't know if I want to put myself out there. I think the biggest fear that I would have and probably a lot of people would have is that nobody would care about what I had to say. And, you know, it's like, who are you to, you know, think that you're so interesting that you should live stream. But I mean, you look at like Twitch and you look at, even the people playing like Fortnite and stuff, like people like live streamers, people like just seeing normal people doing normal stuff. And you know, just seeing something authentic. So I think that if you just challenge yourself, like right now I'm kind of doing like a little mini challenge. Like I just want to live stream for 30 days straight on my Facebook page.
That's
and
impressive.
Just every day.
Yeah.
Try to do like just a little tip, nothing crazy, you know, like sometimes some of them are 3 minutes, some of them are 10 minutes, whatever I can think of. And, you know, you just really try to find your voice. And part of it is just going through it. And I guarantee that if you go back and look at your earliest live streams, you'll be like, oh, like that was terrible. But you kind of need to go through that to kind of find your good voice, you know, to get used to it, get comfortable and figure out what you want to talk about and how you want to do it.
It's almost like an initiation ritual, you think of it that way. And I think it's also one of those activities where the more you do it, just by natural coincidence, you also start to find out a lot about your customers or your potential customers, right? So you're learning about like, what do people like when you start talking about something, what they get a bunch of like questions, right? Or a flurry of questions about that thing. So it's really customer one-on-one discovery and getting really in touch with your community, right?
Yeah. And that's a really important part. And that's why when my concept, when I made my game, was not to design the perfect game and then do a huge marketing push and then get it out. My idea is more like iterative, like you were talking about. Because from software, there's this field, agile development. And the whole concept is you put something out small, like a minimum viable product, and you get some feedback and then you iterate on it. And then you know, it's a constant loop of feedback from the users and what you're producing. And so I think you put something small out there, you get it play tested, you get your feedback, you fix it, you know, without getting too crazy. Because so many people, they think they have the perfect game and they spend, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars making it only to find out that nobody wants it and that it's no good. And they could have found out way earlier if they just kind of made it a little smaller and got some feedback. And I think you could apply the same thing with live streams or any sort of content you're putting out, blog posts, whatever. You put something out and you put a lot out and you kind of see what are people, what's getting the views, what are people commenting on, what are people like writing you, hey, that was really helpful. And instead of having to guess, you just see what people are responding to and you do more of it.
Totally. For those that are listening, a really good book on this is Lean Startup by Eric Ries, talking about Lean Startup methodology and really judging your progress based on what you learn, then instead of in the early days, what you earn, right? So the faster you learn, the better you do. Ironically, I think also this applies to like comedy, where a lot of successful comedians, you think they just like are magical, right? But they
definitely
really are picking they're cherry picking the best jokes that performed well over many audiences, right?
Right. You don't see Chris Rock in like some crappy club in Tennessee or something like that, where he does like 100 jokes that bomb and, you know, one of them hits. And then all you see is the ones that hits. And that's exactly what they do. They just test a bunch of stuff. They iterate. And, you know, when they find that line that works, they keep tweaking that line until it's absolutely perfect. And they put all their best stuff together. And I mean, it's exactly like that. It's a great analogy.
When it comes to the business of board games, let's talk a little bit about the marketing side and some of the tricks that you have uncovered, right? When it comes to getting attention when you're live on Kickstarter or when you're doing a product launch of any kind, what are some of the things you've uncovered there?
Well, I know a lot of people say this, and this is probably the biggest thing, is just to have a lot of success right off the bat. That's like the best thing you can do. So if you can come with a deluge of backers already, and this is why I think building an email list is so important, building a community is so important, because for this game is I'm having trouble even saying my own game name. This game is a disaster. My speech is a disaster right now. I thought that we'd have to bring almost all of our own customers, right? Because it wasn't a big miniature game or anything like you see on Kickstarter a lot. And we ended up, I think we ended up only bringing about 40%, and about 60% were just people that were browsing on Kickstarter. And I think the reason is because it funded so quickly, it overfunded, and it just ends up on, you know, all the algorithms, the front page, things like that. And people want to see what's going on here. So in terms of tips and tricks, I mean, it's obviously you need a video. It's good to have a nice hook in the video. But if you could do the work ahead of time to make sure that you're bringing people in with you, that gives you the best success. It just kind of snowballs.
When you said a lot, you said make sure you get a lot of funding. What would you define as a lot? Is this a third of your goal? Should you hit your goal on the first day? What do you think is a lot?
Ideally, I mean, you should definitely try to hit your goal on the first day. Ideally, you hit it in, you know, almost immediately, which is what we, you know, we did a few hours, I think by noon, the day we launched, before lunch, we had hit. And part of this is just setting the expectations, right? So if you have a low goal, then it's much easier to hit that. So we only had a $500 goal. And so we could say at the end of this, like we overfunded by, you know, 1500% or, you know, 2000%, whatever it is. And that just kind of feeds itself and just makes it seem more successful. And it is more successful when you have a low goal.
What if you have a beginner who comes to you and is like, dude, I need, you know, 5K or I need 8K to actually make this game. Like, what if I set a really low goal and I don't end up raising the amount I need? Like, how do I deal with that situation?
That's a good question. I think you gave me a good idea for something to cover in a live stream later today. how do you come up with the goal?
You got to credit me, man. You got to credit me.
I'll credit you. Thanks, Sal, for the idea. I think a lot of people kind of do the math more straightforward. They think, how much do I need to, if I have this many backers, right? And they kind of pick an arbitrary number, something that's nice and round. But I think the best way to do it, and this is why it's kind of hard to explain, and it might need some visuals, is to figure out just what you need to break even. Like, not even how much you need to make a profit. Like, let's say you were going to buy 500 units of your game, right? Let's say you've costed it out. You don't want to find out. And so that doesn't mean you need 500 backers. You just need to figure out how many backers you need to cover however much the cost of those 500 units are. Mm. So you might only need 200 backers to cover the cost, because there's profit, right? You only might only need 200 backers to pay off, to break even on that 500 units. And then let's say you did only get the 200 backers. The rest is just gravy. You could take those extra 300 units. You could sell them on Amazon or sell them in stores or whatever. But that's your goal, because it gives you a lower funding goal. It's easier to hit. It's easier to get that momentum. And, you know, it's just less pressure on yourself. You don't need to sell all your units. You just need to break even.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. And it also kind of gives you a sigh of relief, right? Because then anything after that is gravy, like you said, is profit. So that's a really interesting way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Now with the actual campaign here, let's just say that you end up raising more than you thought, right? So you had like a $5,000 goal, you end up raising $15,000. How does that happen? Like, do people on Kickstarter discover you, or do you go viral when it comes to social media? Like, where were people discovering you with your project?
I think most of the people were finding me on Kickstarter, aside from the people that I brought in. I was having trouble actually posting on Facebook, because Facebook does this thing where they'll just bury outside links. They want you to stay in the Facebook ecosystem.
Such BS, yeah.
I know. So I was posting on my own Facebook page, and I'm like, hey guys, I have a Kickstarter today. Like, no, I'm not talking about my group. In my group, it showed up, but in my on my Facebook just timeline, I was like, hey everybody, because I have thousands of friends, or mostly acquaintances, but I wanted people to see it. I wanted my, my relatives to see it, and they ghost it. I asked my wife, I'm like, wait, let me look at, show me your Facebook timeline, and my post from 10 minutes earlier just was invisible. It just wasn't there. So you can't rely on social media completely unless you're paying for it. But I find that the margins are kind of thin on board games, so it's a little bit hard to justify too much ad spend unless unless you have a really high margin game, a really expensive game, like a Kingdom Death Monster kind of thing. Then the margin's probably good enough. But so I think it's cheaper to just sort of spend ads to build that community. It doesn't cost that much to get people in your community, and then they get to know you, they become warm leads, and they become friends in a lot of cases. And then they'll see your posts in your Facebook group or wherever, Instagram page.
One of the things you just mentioned there was the idea of margins, right? And I think a lot of the times it's difficult to figure out what you should charge, and there are many schools of thought when it comes to that. What are your thoughts on how you should price a game?
So and 'cause like I said before, I'm mostly focused on your first game. I think that basically you should plan on your first game just being just try to break even with a little bit of profit to give yourself a cushion. So, I mean, your main thing you want to do is you want to learn, you want to go through the process, you want to establish credibility, and you want to build a customer base. Those hundreds of people that end up backing, they're your customers now. You get their email addresses, and when you come out with your next game, you don't have to pay for them. You already have them. So that's where I would focus more on the margins. For this game is a disaster. We only made, I don't know, a few bucks per game, $2, $3, nothing crazy. At the end, we probably ended up splitting maybe $2,000. So it's certainly not anything to quit your job over or anything like that. But if you're serious about this being either a hobby or, potentially income, then you got to think more long term. You got to think getting into retail or coming out with your next game and that sort of thing. But the first game should just be sort of like a springboard.
Where are you when it comes to those elements with retail or wholesaling distribution? Is that an avenue you are exploring for this one?
Not for this game is a disaster. It was kind of designed to be sort of a simple game. It didn't plan it to be like the next Catan or anything like that. So the next one, which I don't have any news on right now, but probably soon, that'll be more. We're gonna look more into retail and that sort of thing.
I really like that perspective also because it takes a lot of pressure off, right? If you have a very high ticket game, there's a lot of pressure for you also to deliver. So I really like that kind of approach, is just kind of getting a success under your belt. And I've had people on my other show that have had 10 Kickstarter projects, right? So there's no reason why you can't launch another and another and another and literally build a business just off of Kickstarter.
Right. And then each one of those just kind of is like another brick in the wall of like cementing your credibility of, look, I'm someone that comes out with a game and I deliver on time. And, if you focus on that stuff. And another piece of advice I'd have for people that are just starting out, because there are so many things to do and to know, you could, if you can, try to use. Not like try to not go the China method, try not to mass produce your game. I went with the Game Crafter, which they're much more expensive. They have good quality stuff, much more expensive, but it completely cuts out having to worry about fulfillment and manufacturing and shipping. You don't have to worry about Chinese New Year or your games being on a boat for 3 months. You don't have to worry about like mailing it to international people. Like they just kind of handle everything. So that's like half the equation just
The
completely
Game
covered.
Crafter. Okay.
Thegamecrafter.com. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And
I'll look into that.
they're an American company, so the shipping's pretty cheap to the US. And so then you don't have to worry about tariffs, you don't have to worry about import fees, anything like that. And that's just a huge load that like someone could get like deer in the headlights when they're like, oh my God, how do I order something from China? It's gonna be on a boat. Do I pay taxes? Do I, this and that? How do I ship it to people? And that just takes, like I said, half of it completely out of it. And then you can just focus on designing your game, building your community.
When it comes to the rewards, like we talk a little bit about, you know, the amount that you funded, which I think is incredible. You now have all these backers and stuff. Are there any other perks, if you will, to doing a Kickstarter? Did you have people who then, you know, reach out to you based off of this? Or did you feel like you got more credibility in the industry? Are there any other, you know, perks that come with running a campaign?
Well, I'm talking to you right now, Sal. So obviously there's a perk to you know, to actually doing it. I think it just makes you, it builds your credibility, not for delivering games, but just sort of as a personality in the industry. Doors open, you get on podcasts, or, you know, people will review your game if you already have a track record of having games come out. Whereas if you're just one of the many people that wants to make a game or is going to make a game, and, you know, they don't know if you're just going to have, if you have two subscribers, if you're going to have, you know, any success or not. So yeah, I think credibility goes a long way.
And in terms of the rewarding part for you as a creator, right? What is the part that you enjoyed the most when it comes to this entire process? Because I'm sure you had a lot of ideas, like just getting started, of how logistics would go, how marketing would go, how gameplay would go, and feedback, all that stuff. For you, what has been the most rewarding part of this entire process?
Well, it's probably a tie between seeing people actually play your game. That's a great feeling when someone's like having a good time and they're telling stories of what happened in their game, and to think that they're at their table with their friends playing a game that you made, that's just a really good feeling. And then for me also, it's being able to help others. I'm starting to help people in my group make their own game, kind of get some attention to the games they're working on, that sort of thing. And I've been sort of compiling everything I've learned, particularly on the marketing side, on like emails and building a community. And I'm trying to put together resources for that, for people to try to help them out and kind of cut through it. Cause I'm when it comes down to it, I'm a very lazy person. And why spend dozens and dozens of hours when you could just cut it down to, you know, something much shorter, just get to the most important parts. TLDR.
TLDR. Yeah. Is there any part of you that wished you had done this sooner?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But now that I've been through it, and it seemed like such a monumental task, and then it's like, you know what? I could have done this a year, 5 years earlier. I mean, you'd think that if you were there at the early days of Kickstarter when you had no competition, you know, you could put out probably anything and funded and like well overfunded. And there's more competition now, which is why you got to do things like you got to build your community first and bring it with you.
For me, anytime I look back and I've done something, whether that's like write a book or do YouTube or a podcast, I'm like, man, why did I not do that sooner? You know, it's just like, it's almost, a looking back, I'm like, man, I could have done this like years ago. Right. And it's right. So crazy how that works.
Yeah. And I mean, I thought the same thing when I was making YouTube videos in 2009, I was like, wow, man, if I had just started in 2008 or 2007, when there weren't a ton of YouTubers, I'd have a million subscribers. And so I think in that sense, all you could do is look around now and figure out what the next thing is going to be. You know, like Instagram got huge. And my wife says, man, I wish I would just posted a bunch on Instagram a few years ago. I could have been an influencer now. I could have whatever. So, you know, it's kind of just looking at the market and seeing like, what's the next big thing going to be? Like, you know, try a bunch of different things and see what sticks. Goes back to that iterative approach.
Well said. Well said. Where can people go and join this group that you have created for board game addicts and people who really, you know, enjoy playing games?
Yeah. So on Facebook, if you just search Board Game Club, it should be one of the first results, or it's facebook.com/groups/theboardgameclub. Other than that, if you want to see my posts about just little tips for making a game, just facebook.com/BobbyBoardGames. Although I might change that name soon, so get there while it's hot.
Do you have any closing advice for those individuals who kind of are in the same place you were? You know, maybe they didn't commandeer their office, you know, their office place to set up a board game club, but they definitely are passionate about playing games and they're like, I want to make my next game. Do you have any either advice in terms of tips, encouragement, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm working on some more stuff, but actually, I put together an ebook. It's for free. Get it at boardgamedesignsecrets.com. And that's sort of like my manifesto. It kind of sums up everything we talked about, but with a little more how-to. And like I said, it's just you can just download it for free. It's at boardgamedesignsecrets.com.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and look forward to this upcoming launch that you have for your next game.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sal.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Funding the Dream on Kickstarter podcast. If you would like to become a podcast guest, just like Bobby, and you'd like to come on the show and share educational information that's helpful and useful for other listeners of this show, all you got to do is go to fundingthedreamonkickstarter.com. That's fundingthedreamonkickstarter.com. Enter your application in order to be interviewed. And if I think you can bring good value to the show, and I think that you have good advice to share, then I will consider you for an interview on this podcast. So Funding the Dream on Kickstarter.com, just go there and submit an application. You can also join the email list there if you want to find out about some new shows and stuff that I have going on. In addition, I also offer coaching and one-on-one consultations. So if you like what I bring to this industry and you want to get my feedback, you can learn a little bit about that on crowdcrux.com/coaching. I do another podcast in the industry. Obviously, this podcast is exclusively focused on gaming and tabletops and those kinds of things. It would mean so much to me if you took a second to leave a rating and review in iTunes on the store there. And also, if you're listening to this on another app, to do that there. That would mean so much to me as we try to revamp and revitalize this podcast. But finally, if you want to get in touch, again, fundingthedreamonkickstarter.com, crowdcrux.com/coaching, crowdcrux.com/coaching. Either of those are awesome links. And in addition, thank you so much for staying around and for being willing to support this podcast as we continue to revamp it and get on new guests. It means so much to me. My name is Salvador Brigman, and I will see you next time.